All right, now, you have been you've been approached by a colonel, did you say, that said this fellow should win a medal?
That's right. Colonel, he's the commander. He's the regimental commander.
He ought to be court-martialed.
I told him he ought to be court-martialed instead of getting a medal.
All right, go on from there with the story.
Well, anyway, we went on up there, and then he took us on an envelopment thing, and out there they'd gotten up to us and brought us some mail and stuff. We'd been there, I guess, a day or so in this envelopment, trying to feel our way around through this, because we were more or less behind part of the Jap, and the colonel sent this intelligence sergeant up and asked me for me to take a small enemy outpost up there. And I asked the intelligence sergeant if he knew where the outpost was. He said, yes, he did. And I said, how far is it from right here? And he said it was about, he said it's about half a mile. So I told him to turn around to the company commander, and I told him I was going to take the weapons platoon with me, too. And he said, well, you won't need them. And I said, well, if he's wanting the whole platoon to capture the enemy outpost, I'd like to have some support. He said, well, take whatever you want. So we walked out, and we hadn't gone 100 yards. And he said to me, this is it. I said, well, you told me it's a half a mile. I said, we haven't got 100 yards. So I told the platoon sergeant, I said, get the platoon sergeant back there and hold the platoon, and I'm going to take you. We're going up here and see what it looks like. So he and I was crawling around up there, and I looked over and I saw this long box, something that size, something like that. I don't know how long. It's a wooden box. And is it in his path? And I said, I motioned for him to look and see what was in that box. And there's a Jap by the tree. He raised that box up and in. And I saw this Jap, and I fired. He dropped that, and he took off. I never saw him no more. Next time I saw him, he's walking along the street in Miami. So we got the heck of a fire back there. We got the platoon and used the support platoon and everything. And we ended up taking it, but it was, instead of a small enemy outpost, it was an anti-aircraft installation. And we got it and the guns and all. And so he was a little critical of me. I got a couple of men killed in that. In fact, one of the Japs put him in a foxhole. But anyway, you know, if you're fighting up there, you know, we keep and get people killed like that. So that was one of the reasons, I guess, that I went to Marauder, getting away from them.
You were crawling along the ground.
Yeah.
Can you sort of describe the vegetation? And
well, there's palm, you know, there's these great old big plants that look like something like, I don't know, Spanish needles or something, nettle type stuff. It's always
had stickers on.
Cuna, they call it grass. It's a great old big, had all that stuff on it.
Catchy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's where I received my first injury, is up there. They sent a message up to me, and this sergeant and I was standing under this coconut tree, and I was looking at the message. And I assumed the Japs could see me. I'm pretty sure they did, because they shot, opened up on us, and shot a limb. Big old, great old big limb out, and it fell on me. And then there, and the skin up my head, and that's, and it hit the sergeant, the one who brought it up, hit him on the ankle. And I I was down trying to dress him, and finally I was trying to pacify him. I thought we could do it, so...
Didn't knock you out?
No, it didn't knock me out. But it it hit him in the ankle, and it just... I was bracing it. I told him I thought they could save it. I'll never forget his remark to me. He said, "That'll be all right." I said, "I'd give both of them to get out of here." I felt something like he did.
I guess that was the truth.
Yeah, I guess it was. The next time I saw him, I saw in a magazine, I saw a picture of this boy's name is Tracy. I remember just as well, Sergeant Tracy. I saw him somewhere in Texas where they fit him with the artificial legs to take an exercise. And you know, the next time I saw that, something.
So he must have lost the leg.
Oh, he lost the leg. Yeah, about that, yeah.
Art, you've been trying to get to the point where you volunteer for Merrill's Marauders.
Well, it was after the...
What was the final straw?
I guess that right there was the final straw. But we went on then and took the Munda Airport and drove the Japs off at Munda Airport. And in that, there was a little interesting thing. After we had taken them under airport, Gus Hauser, who's the local, was a lieutenant. And the other, he is in another battalion now. He wasn't in my battalion, but he's in another battalion. And they'd lined it around at Rice Anchorage. And they'd got up in the boondocks there and it bogged down. And they'd been surrounded for, seemed like 15 to 20 days up there, and they was up there without any food, any great amount of food. And after we'd taken the Munda Airport, then we moved in to get to them to give them food. And so we did. We went up, pushed the Japs from around them, and took food up to them. And the resistance on the island, it ceased, generally speaking. But I don't think the Japs and them up there knew it. We did.
Were the Japs as fanatical fighters?
Oh, yes. They're fanatical. They just come right at you, Lord Lord. They was fanatical.
Didn't regard life?
Life, what seemed to be, they didn't value life at all.
So it was hard to fight that.
Like that, it sure is.
How did you first learn about Merrill Group?
All right, after the Munda fight, after the New Georgia fight, you see, they knew their next objective was going to be Bougainville.
Yeah.
So they took us back to Guadalcanal to refit, and in that period, messenger, the request for volunteers to go on some dangerous mission. That's all. That's about what it said, which would be fast and furious and of a short duration with a high casualty rate. And those that survived, if they had been overseas, the 18 months would be rotated back to the United States. And I just felt like it couldn't be no rougher than it had been so far, so I volunteered. I got it. Now, the Merrill Marauders, do you want me to tell why how they came to being?
Yeah, if you will.
Well, they came into being as a result of the Quebec Conference. The British had a fanatic general, Ord C. Wingate, that had the previous dry season had infiltrated from India over into Burma and went in there and tore up a lot of installation of the Japanese who had captured Burma at that time. And they brought him out, and Churchill had brought him up there, and he'd sold Hap Arnold and President Roosevelt and his staff on us, them furnishing a similar type of organization, and that's how it's organized. Then they took a regiment size unit, about 3,000 people, so it was involved, and they got They wanted one battalion, or about a third of it, out of the Pacific. Or it had been in jungle fighting and were combat veterans. And they took one third in out of the Caribbean area that were jungle trained, maybe seen no combat. And then the other third had been in the United States, had some jungle training, but no combat either. So two-thirds of it came from there and one-third out of Pacific. So that's where I came from, as those would have been.
Now, why would they want a combination like that?
I don't know. It was such an unusual unit, and they're going to have such an unusual... They thought that Wingate thought he was going to command us, actually. And they gave him a glider, this... you'd heard of Flip Corkin and the Funnies, mm-hmm. Colonel Cochran. Well, he's the Flip Corkin and the Funnies. He'd organized a glider. I said, to start out with, maybe make a glider invasion in around Mandalay, have three landing places, and expand from there. But Stilwell blocked that and used us up with the Chinese in the northern Burma.
You'd think that he'd want all experienced jungle fighters to fight in the jungle.
Yeah, you would think so. But,
bring fresh blood into the...
Well, I guess most of us that had had experience, is the thing about it, most of us that had experience, at the end of this mission, which they said that we'd be rotated back to the United States, they might still have work to do, and a lot of us would be, they'd never be eligible, and they'd have nobody there to do it.
They'd lose you all.
They'd lose us all, you see.
Okay, go ahead before I interrupted you.
That's how many of the
information was being spread around while you were back at Guadalcanal, I think.
Yeah, that's, they asked for volunteers, and so that's when I volunteered. And, at one of the reunions of the 148th, some of the boys asked me, they wondered why I left them and all of that. But two battalions from the United States, they were coming out of from San Francisco on the Lurling as a transport. And they sent us. They picked us up on small ships and took us from Guadalcanal back to Noumea in New Caledonia. And Lurline then picked us up. There's about 650 or 700 of us there. And then they picked up another 200 and something in Brisbane, Australia, which made up the combat people. They had been in New Guinea fighting in the One Stanley Mountains in New Guinea, the ones from there. And then we went around... blow Australia and up the Indian Ocean to India, and then start at the India. Then they organized us something like the British. That's because Wingate was still...
Wasn't there a purpose behind this?
Yeah, the idea of the thing was to try to get a land supply to China.
Is that because the Japs had captured
Burma and taken away their... They had no way of only flying. That's right. The Burma Road.
How about the Ledo Road?
Ledo. Well, that's the one that we built after we pushed the Japs back
out.
Oh,
you built that one. Okay.
Yeah, the General Pick.
Replaced the Burma Road.
Yeah, to go down and tie into the Burma Road. This road that didn't ever exist. It just... through this wasteland, hill country. And you see, and all the supplies to China was having to be flown by Hum, coming out of India, because Stilwell was a head honcho, wasn't that? And so all of it was being that, and they was wanting to open this Ledo Road, and then they was wanting to capture some ports or some places, some airfields there where they could... continued to bomb Japan from there, you see, instead of that. We as island hopping in are coming up the other way. That's the purpose of it.
And your objective was to do what?
Our objective was to clear the Japs from the northern Burma, get them out to this road could be built, and it's going to lay a pipeline. They'll land up at Berlin, right with it, a pipeline to pump gas, you know, or fuel, and so they can supply all these plants. And that was our mission. Was to
I looked through this book here, and I saw some pictures that sort of brought home, I'm sure that's familiar with you. But if I were to try to imagine a hell on earth, that would be probably pretty close to what I would imagine.
Yeah. You see, there was no roads in this. There was one main road, but out in the other, there's just animal trails and a few trails, and it's easier to travel going through that way than it was to try to fight through all this tall kunar grass and all that thing stuff. Cut you and do everything. So if we found a stream, we'd stay in that stream as much as we could.
Wasn't there all kinds of diseases?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Lord, associated with that swampy. Yeah. It was swamp, wasn't
it? Oh, heck, yeah, a lot of it. You see, we were in there in the dry season. In the monsoon season, that's just a regular lake. Now, from where we went in and captured, and when I flew out, a lot of it was just lake. Like a lake. Yeah, we lost. Now, in actual combat, we lost a very small percent in actual combat. Most of our casualties was from disease. Malaria, amoebic dysentery,
yeah.
Typhus. We contracted from some bite of a mite. Yeah.
How often were you inspected by someone close to Stillwell's rank? Were you, the big boys stay far enough back that they weren't exposed in any way? Was this strictly a poor man's job?
They took a fella that was to be our commander, which was Colonel Hunter. They took him from Fort Benning. He is a training down there, and so he brought the troops, sponsored the troops to India, and then they was going to turn them over for training. And when we got there to the training, you saw all kinds of big men, such as Lord Louis Mountbatten. He is the chief honcho over there, and this Ordwin Gate, and then finally they sent us a Brigadier General Merle. He came to us to be our commander.
And he was a general.
Yeah, he was a general.
Okay.
And he was with Stillwell when he was run out of Burn, but he was just a major. He didn't see him over a period of time. But anyway, they organized. When we got there, they organized this, something like this. Wingate had organized his teams, and so they took a battalion. Each battalion had two columns. They organized, and they called them combat teams. We were in the two columns, so we had six combat teams, and they operated more or less independently.
How much were the Chinese involved in this?
The Chinese, they had two divisions, and they were pushing down these the only roadways. And when they had pushed, they believed in just digging their whole tunnel for the enemy instead of fighting and trying to outmaneuver. So still what got us released from Euston, the British, and he brought us up there, and we'd make just like an end run in football, and we'd go way back in the back and slap a roadblock on them where they couldn't get their supplies and stuff up. They'd have to withdraw and coming to knock us off. Well, we hit and run. We left when they thought it was too hot. We didn't have to stay there most of the time. And so when they do that, then the Chinese would move forward. You see, and that's how much they were involved. They had two divisions, and we only had regiment.
Did you respect them as fighters?
Well, they were not aggressive, but they had no fear. They were rascals. They didn't have any fear, but they weren't.
Weren't well trained either.
No, very poorly trained. Very poorly trained.
And how about supplied? Were you able to keep them adequately supplied with the flying the hump and the other methods that you had of getting them?
No, that was one of the problems. That was their problem. You see, and our supplies had to be flown in and parachuted to us, too, because we had no land supply either in the way we operated.
Can you describe General Merrill?
Yeah, General Merrill was a...
He could tell me a little about him.
Was
he a patent type of leader?
No, sir, he wasn't. He was a... like I say, he was a major, and he spoke Japanese fluent. He'd been... an observer or an attaché or something in Japan before the war, you see. And at the time of the war, he was working out of the Philippines, and he's going back to the Philippines, and he was sent to Burma. And then the Japanese took over Burma, and they had to run out of there. But no, he was a cavalry officer, and the tactics we used was something similar to a cavalry, you know, flanks and ran like that. Yeah, at that time he was about 40-year-old, I guess, something like that. I don't know just how old he was, something in that neighborhood. But he was pretty good.
Did you see him very often?
Oh yeah, see him right often. Yeah. In fact, he came to the hospital when I was out and was wanting to promote me and send me on some mission. I don't know. I knew I was going to come back to the States.
Now, in this book that I guess you brought, you're referred to as Captain Birch.
Yeah.
Did you go any higher than that while you were over there?
While I was there, I was promoted to... Well, the promotion hadn't come through. I was recommended for the major, or a major, but... I hadn't gotten the promotion.
Now, how long did this operation last? Were you successful in doing what you started out to do?
Well, see, we started out, and I led the first strike that we had at Wallaboom. The first strike was there at Wallaboom, and we created so much upheaval that the Japs withdrew out of that valley, and they had... it was successful because they cleared this Hukong Valley. And then they sent us on another mission. Our next mission after that was another thing. They had a hill range they called Jambabon. And we were around and strike behind them. And on the second mission, the 1st Battalion, our battalion, Orange Combat Team, which I was with, led the first strike, and another one took this strike, and then we went a much more circuitous route, and the idea was for us to hit simultaneously on this road and throw blocks on, and then we try to expand each one and maybe tie in, and one tie in to the other, and but the timing... we made the wide place, but the other battalion had some of its difficult terrain. We had much better terrain to travel over. We went much further around and hit in, and coordination with the communications, like it was, wasn't too good. And we hit the road three or four days before the other never got to it, which was coming the short route, but they didn't fight or dig their way through most of the time, so it wasn't well coordinated at that. And then I was doing my assignment on that one was protecting the flanks. We had certain points to keep so they'd have a route of escape in case they come out. And And the chaps then brought up a couple of battalions, and we delayed those two battalions till they had went in there and done their strike, and the other one had still hadn't hit. And they withdrew out and got behind us. And then we went on through them, and then they, battalion, they got on the hill there, and the chaps surrounded them. And then we had to turn around and fight to get into them, to get them out of there. And that's rough, where that's where that took place, when they're fighting in people.
That was pretty rough.
That was, because you see, first of all, we weren't trained to stay there in a defensive position. We just stayed hit and run, and we weren't trained to just keep pushing and pushing too. You see, and we didn't have artillery support. We had none of the supporting weapons.
No power.
Very little. We had a little we could call in. So then after that, you see, after we had, and we'd been in there the length of time that they seemed to think we'd been in there, about 3 months at the end, after that thing in the book that you're talking about. About 3 months, and then our men should have been evacuated then from the, and taken out of the action. And my doctor and I both recommended it highly, but they said, no, this was what's going to happen. So then they organized us again into three groups. They give a 1st Battalion a regiment of Chinese, and they give the 2nd Battalion, let me see if they gave them any. They gave them about 300 Kachins. That's the natives who had something like OSS or CIA. They were the pre-runner of CIA. So they gave them about 300, and their shot-up battalion, which was pretty weak. And then the battalion that I was with, we got in the 88th Chinese Regiment. And we were then going to go and take an airfield. The main objective was to take an airfield if they needed at Michigan, we called it Michigan. And so then we organized for that. And so we were kept in there much longer than we should have been.
Did you get your rotation back home eventually?
Eventually, yeah. Eventually.
How was your health during most of this time?
I was hospitalized when I first got to India. I was hospitalized for a short while with malaria. Then on the march, we had to march in. We marched into Burma. And on the march up, I got sinusitis and malaria so bad that the doctor told me to go back to the hospital. And so I went into the hospital there and was there 5, 6, 7 days. The rest of them were marching to the road. And after they had marched up to their assembly area where they was going to take off from, James Shepley of Time Life, he died just recently, was a correspondent of Time Life. He come in, come over to my bed and told me, he said he had to come in. And I said, well, how are they doing? He said, they're all up there. He said, they're going to shove off. I said, well, I'm going to try to get out of here then. Of course, I was pretty well up and down. So the Colonel Mitchell decided to release me after urging him a little to release me, and they flew me then in a little cub plane in, caught up with them.
Oh, were you ill after this?
After that, I lasted until about all of my men were gone, had nothing to command, and I was about the last of my unit to come out. But we lost
your casualty rate, you mean?
About 85% of them became casualty. Yeah.
85%?
Yeah. See, they'd have to be evacuated, and you had no replacements. You had nothing left. Yeah. So they wasn't, it was all.
Well, you had nobody to command.
Had nothing. That's right.
Well, you said that
when you were back there at that other place, almost anywhere would have been better than that. Did this prove to be true?
I'd say, it was about the same, each one of them. But this only lasted a short while. That's some 5, 6, 7 months. Something.
Now, what happened after your experiences in Burma when you came back home? Did you stay here in the U.S. after that, or did you go back?
Yeah, I came back, and when I got, I was in the hospital a while at Miami Beach, Florida. And then I sent to Joseph T. Robinson at Little Rock, Arkansas. And I had a battalion there for a while. And then I was sent to Camp Livingston, Louisiana, just going through training cycles. And then when I got out there.
The war was about over.
Yeah.
Well, now, you stayed on in the National Guard.
Yeah, when they come back, you see, I helped reorganize the National Guard. And so I reorganized this battalion in this part of the country. And we had units Barberville, Harlan, London, Williamsburg, and Somerset. And I commanded the battalion until I retired.
What did you retire as?
A colonel.
Colonel?
Yeah.
Chicken colonel?
No, light colonel. Light colonel.
Well, obviously I'm real pleased that you agreed to come in and do this for us. We're about to run out of tape here, looks like. If you ever want to add anything to this, just let me know. And
well, if
we'd love to get it. See this red light of flashing here?
Yeah.
That means that we're running out of tape. So
okay. Well, you know, if there's some of it, you know, that when you listen to it, if you can hear anything and you want to add in that.